ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So now, especially for those who are new, hang on to your hats, because we're going to do something that's appropriate in spiritual circles. Prabhupada trained us, his followers, that when you speak on something about a spiritual subject matter, reference should be made to where the source of your statements come from. So that's what this morning's class is. For those of you that are new, it may seem, you know, a little irrelevant or abstract or 201 and you're at 101 and you say, you know, how do I understand all this? So don't worry about it. It's foundation. Before we build the house, we're going to put the foundation. And I watched. There was building of a temple, and it took longer to build the foundation than it did to build the temple. Like, all kinds of stuff went in that foundation without naming the stuff. All kinds of stuff. Maybe some of you know something about construction. I didn't. And it took longer and more expense to put the stuff than to build the temple. But here we are. This section is scriptural references, both from scripture itself and from our acharyas who are explaining those references on this topic. Always remember Krishna. Never forget Krishna. And we're going to start with a reference that is spoken by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Sanatan Goswami, found in Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is describing the process of bhakti. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu makes reference to a verse from Padma Purana. There's the reference if you'd like. I'll make these PowerPoints available for people who would like at the end. Padma Purana is a very important literature, mode of goodness amongst the Puranas, and a principal literature that the Sri Vaishnavas admire and take as authoritative. And there's sections, for example, in Padma Purana on chanting. There's sections in Padma Purana on the process of bhakti. Very detailed, very authoritative. So this is the reference. We can chant together if you'd like. Smartavya satatam vishnur vismartavyo najatuchit sarva vidignasidhashur Etayor eva kinkarda. So we'll do the second part first. Sarve vidhi nishedha. Vidhi, we'll hear, but I'm doing it slowly. Vidhi means the injunctions, and nishedha means the prohibitions, the do's and the don'ts. There are things that in the bhakti process they're recommended. Do this. It's good for you. Eat your spinach. It's good for you. You know, things that parents say to kids. Clean your room. Brush your teeth. They're good for you. Vidhis. And then there's nishedhas. Don't hit your brother. You know, and don't smack somebody. And don't lie. And there's the do-nots. Vidhis and nishedhas. So sarva, or sarve, all injunctions and prohibitions, all do's and do-nots, they're the kinkara, Kinkara means literally menial servant, kinkara. They're the servants of these two, etayor eva kinkara. Eva means certainly. All do's and don'ts found in the scripture are the servant, they're subordinate to this one principle. That's how important this one principle is. And this one principle, the first part, smartavya satatam vishnu. Real easy. Smartavya is remembrance. And satatam means always remember Vishnu. And then the converse, vismartavya na jatuchit. Not at any time should you forget. Vismartavya na jatuchit. Those, so always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. These principles, always do not, do's and do nots. All other statements, they're subordinate to that one. Those things are to help this one. That's bhakti. Here's Prabhupada's translation directly from Chaitanya Charitamrita. Krishna is the origin of Lord Vishnu. He kind of added that. It's not in verse at all. He, Vishnu, or Krishna, should always be remembered and never forgotten at any time. All the rules and prohibitions mentioned in the Shastras should be servants of these two principles. That's a very important verse. It's the subject of our weekend together. And it's presented in a very simple way, this very same verse, in Prabhupada's Nectar of Devotion. Nectar of Devotion is a summary study of a work by Rupa Goswami, one of our great acharyas, Rupa Goswami, describing bhakti, or devotion, and the amrita of, or nectar of devotion. So he, Rupa Goswami, writes about it. Prabhupada summarizes it in the following language. In the Padma Purana, we saw the Padma Purana text just a moment ago. In the Padma Purana, the same process is advised. There it is said that one should always remember Lord Vishnu. This is called dhyana, or meditation. Those of you that are familiar with Bhagavad Gita, you know that chapter 6, Bhagavad Gita, is dhyana yoga. So, dhyana upon what? Meditation upon Vishnu. Always remembering Krishna. It is said that one has to meditate with his mind fixed upon Vishnu. And this is called samadhi or trance. Then the next paragraph, I'm not going to read it, I'll just summarize it directly from Nectar Devotion. Any of the forms of Vishnu, Krishna, it fulfills the purpose. In other words, someone may be a Nrisingha Bhakta. So it works. It fulfills the purpose because Nrisingha is a form of Krishna or Vishnu, etc. So it fulfills the injunction. And then Prabhupada, in the same paragraph, teaches something I heard him say so many times. In Vedic language, whenever something is said, do this. Implied is a prohibition. Don't fail to do this. Or don't do that, which is failing to do this. Or vice versa, if there's a prohibition, there's some injunction. Don't forget Krishna. Always remember Krishna. And then the next paragraph, Prabhupada says that this is for everybody, regardless of your, whether you're brahmachari or sannyasi or grihastha or whoever you are, and whatever your occupation is, similarly. You may be an engineer, you may be a kid, you may be an old man, you may be a doctor, you may be a teacher, you may be whatever you may be, it applies to everybody. It's across the board. Every living entity that has a material body, it applies. Something that you do with your mind. Think of Krishna, never forget Krishna. And then he concludes in Nectar Devotion, same point once again, all other good things, they're in pursuant of this one thing. And all other bad things, they're in pursuant of the prohibition. The prohibition thing, we'll hear some more. It blocks your remembrance of Krishna. So don't do things that are going to block your remembrance of Krishna or obstruct your remembrance of Krishna. Don't do those things. That's bhakti. You select those things that are going to help you remember and reject those things that are going to cause forgetfulness. Now this is a line drawing. There was no digital cameras at the time. And unfortunately we don't have a portrait by an artist. But here's a line drawing of Rupa Goswami. For those of you that are new, Rupa Goswami is the number one leading follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu amongst all of the incredibly elevated persons who were followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He's the most elevated. He's the leader. He's the next acharya following Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he wrote this Nectar Devotion, or in Sanskrit, it's Bhakti Rasa Amrita Sindhu, the ocean of the Nectar Devotion. And he makes reference, you have to listen carefully, pardon me, but you have to listen carefully because there's something that's a little different than in Prabhupada's writings, but it's okay. But listen carefully. So Rupa Goswami makes reference to a verse in chapter 1 of Canto 7, imaged at the bottom here, where Narada Muni is having a conversation. He's instructing Maharaj Yudhisthira. And as you see, it's in Krishna's presence. And the other Pandavas are also hearing. And minus the detail of the circumstance, Yudhisthira wants to know, his question is, how is it that this super nasty Shishupal, super mean, vicious, offensive, bad Shishupal got liberation? When great saints and mystics and yogis and us, these very elevated persons, they try and try, they try for the whole lifetime, many lifetimes, and sometimes still don't get liberation. And this bad Shishupal got liberation. We all saw it, because he saw it without the detail. So this verse comes in response to that, 7.1.32, and the reference, it's just half of the verse, but Rupa Goswami is indicating that Shishupal was successful in becoming liberated because he fixed his mind on Krishna. Although he fixed his mind on Krishna in a bad way, like scorn, hatred, vilifying, but he fixed his mind on Krishna. And so somehow or other, not by Shishupal, don't follow Shishupal's footsteps, but in favorable way. So as you see, that's from the verse, directly from Canto 7, Chapter 1. Tasmat kenapi upayena mana krishna krishne niveshayat. The translation, Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that's that BRS at the top. Therefore, one may somehow think of Krishna, as you see, Niveshayat is underlined. that's somehow, think of Krishna, then kenapi upayena is by any of the favorable methods. Favorable methods is important. Having derision and scorn and hatred and offensive animosity towards Krishna, that's not recommended. But favorable, that's recommended. And here is Prabhupada's translation of the same verse taken directly from the Bhagavatam, at least that section of the verse. Somehow or other, the same kenapi upayena, one must consider the form of Krishna very seriously. That's mana, that's what you do with your mind. Mana refers to the mind. You consider something, you contemplate something, you fix your mind on something, and that something is Krishne, or the form of Krishna. And niveshayet, with great attention, great focus, Prabhupada's translation, very seriously. Again, I'm hoping that the new people don't get bored by this. But it's important, because we have to have a good foundation. Why are we talking about this anyways? It's a nice topic, but scripturally it's very important to talk about the topic this whole weekend spent together. And here's why, from the scriptural references. So it's coming from Padma Purana, and then it's coming from Srimad Bhagavatam on the process of bhakti explained by Rupa Goswami, which is following Mahaprabhu's teachings. And his nephew, Jiva Goswami, made a commentary on that very verse. And we're going to make reference to Jiva Goswami's commentary. It's very short. It's under Sadhana Bhakti. It's toward the end of the Sadhana Bhakti section. Speaks of waves instead of 1.2. It's the second wave of the eastern section. It says Rupa Goswami's poetic language. So now we're going to go back to the verse. Jiva Goswami says, he's commenting on this. Specifically, he's paying attention to the word favorable, because that's the translation in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, is the translation in Jiva Goswami's commentary. Favorable is emphasized by any favorable methods, this kenapi upayena. So by any of these methods, upayena, including lust, affection, family relationship, and vaidhi bhakti, but without enmity. Enmity mentioned specifically because of Shishupal. It was enmity. Or Kamsa, who was fear. He fixed his mind on Krishna because he heard that from a voice in the sky, a prophecy, that he would be killed by the eighth son of Devaki, and he came to know that the eighth son of Devaki was Krishna, so his mind is fixed on Krishna out of fear. Now, bhakti doesn't include Kamsa and Shishupal, doesn't include enmity and fear. Bhakti is, you should fix your mind in a favorable way. And, you know, that's what the instruction, going back to the reference of all of this, that's the instruction of Narada to Yudhisthira. He got liberation, but a different kind of liberation than the devotees get. He got becoming one with the Supreme, merging into the body of Krishna. That's what he got. So favorable excludes hatred, and favorable excludes fear. One's mind should concentrate by using one of the favorable methods, such as affection. That's what Jiva Goswami says is the meaning. You with me so far? They're building the foundation. So the next reference is Sanatana Goswami, where Sanatana Goswami makes reference to the same Smartavya Satatam Vishnu or Vismartavya Nujata Chit. That reference from his commentary, Vaishnava Toshini. Vaishnava Toshini is the title of his commentary on Bhagavatam. And the section that he's commenting on is 10th Canto, Chapter 29. Those of you that are familiar a little bit with the Bhagavatam, that's, he's describing the position of the gopis. Because just following that is the song of the gopis, where their minds are fixed upon Krishna and intense feelings of separation from Krishna. So he is describing this verse, our topic, always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna, in his commentary there. So he refers to this same tasmat kenapi upayena manak krishne nivesha yet. Same. And he emphasizes, as Jiva Goswami emphasizes, and there's that this is to be done in a favorable way. Now, what's the big deal about favorable and unfavorable? Well, there's multiple things, because bhakti is favorable. It's not enmity, and it's not fear. And prior to that verse, if you remember the numbers, it's 7132. Five verses earlier, 7127, there's this curious verse spoken by Narada, listen carefully, where Narada says, he's explaining how Shishupal got liberation. The verse translates, one cannot achieve such intense absorption in thought of the Supreme Lord by devotional service as one can through enmity toward him. That was Shishupal. He was fixed. I mean, here's a description from one of the scriptures, Vaishnava scriptures. Shishupal was a relative of Krishna, some kind of cousin or something. And Krishna was just some few days older, born before Shishupal. And when Shishupal was born, many people came, oh, child is born, Haribol. You know, that kind of scene. And in the course of that gathering of people that were welcoming the newborn child from the parents of Shishupal, they just mentioned Krishna's name. Oh, didn't you know that Krishna was just born, the son of Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj? And they're about the same age, Krishna. Just mentioning Krishna's name. And Shishupal started to scream. Not cry. Not wail. But scream. Some of you know what that sound is like. Scream so loud. And sometimes children will do that and they calm down, but he didn't calm down. The mother tried to calm him down. He wouldn't calm down. They thought maybe there's a medical problem. So they got doctors and nothing worked. He screamed for hours. He screamed all day. He screamed all night. He screamed the next day. It went on for a month. He didn't sleep. He just screamed hearing Krishna's name. He had intense animosity toward Krishna from the get-go. And it was like that his whole life. And to the end, it was like that to the end. His mind was fixed on Krishna in enmity, big time. But it wasn't favorable. So Narada is commenting that it's a puzzle, but fortunately Sanatana Goswami solves the puzzle. Why would Sanatana Goswami... So then we should just be like Shishupala and have enemy toward Krishna and fix the mind in Krishna and we go, you know, get liberation. If you want liberation, there's a great way to do it, right? Seems like that's what Narada is saying. There isn't a better way to fix the mind in any form of devotional service. Then he explains in his commentary, what this means is Vaidhi Bhakti, in contrast with Raganuga Bhakti. So here's what he says. I'll read it. This is the translation. This verse indicates that one should surpass the path of worshipping the Lord with reverence according to scriptural knowledge and accept Raganuga or Bhava, Mark. From that point of view, the intensity of meditation in hatred, Shishupal, is praised for its absorption in the Lord. That intensity should be maintained along with affection or friendship, favorable. In that sense, hatred is mentioned in this present verse. We'll touch on this two more times. And again, for new people, my apology. But this is the scriptural foundation for our topic, always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. Our teaching is, if done properly, the unregulated life of material existence becomes regulated by the regulation of the vidhis of bhakti. And the vidhis of bhakti help one to become mindful of Krishna, but the mindfulness of Krishna is further nourished by the hearing, etc., about Krishna. We'll hear some more this morning. And it's meant to bring us to a stage of the mind, not just by vidhis, initiatives, by regulations and prohibitions, to come to the stage of fixed, always upon Krishna, in love of Krishna. And that's this what Raga Marga is. It's a spontaneous, not just governed by vidhis, initiatives. But in the vidhi initiata stage of bhakti, it's one thing. So that's what the emphasis that Narada is making and Sanatana Goswami is explaining. And then, almost done with Sanatana Goswami's commentary, he makes two other references from Padma Purana and from the 11th canto, Bhagavatam. That's Uddhava Gita, Krishna's instruction to Uddhava, which says, by hatred and fear, one cannot see the Lord. Meaning, Shishupal saw and Kamsa saw, but they didn't see Krishna. They saw an object of hatred and an object of fear. They didn't see Krishna properly. You know? Like at the end of the 11th chapter Bhagavad Gita, after showing the universal form, Arjuna says, yikes, this is fearful, please remove that form. So I want to see the original form. Krishna shows his forearm form, then his two-arm form, and says, it's very rare to behold this form. Not so. Shishupal and Kamsa saw, but they didn't see. They saw something else than what Arjuna saw, the actual identity of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then the Padma Purana says, you can't see the Lord of the heart out of fear and hatred, but only through devotion, that means favorable, with love, friendship, devotion, then you can see. You can see. Not with material eyes, but you can see Krishna. Just like Prahlad. Where is Vishnu? He's everywhere. Sanatana Goswami concludes. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, 7:25 Bhagavad Gita, Yogamaya Samavrata, I'm covered by my deluding potency. People can't see Krishna, even they're seeing Krishna. It's like the deity. One can see the deity but not see the deity. You can become Kamsa and Shishupal and see Krishna but not see Krishna, because they're covered by the deluding potency of the Lord. So to get on the other side of the deluding potency of the Lord, he has to withdraw it. And he withdraws it when the mood is favorable. Always remembering Krishna in a favorable way. Now, one step back, listen carefully, because it's part of our foundation here. Though anger and hatred do not give a proper realization of the Lord, at a later time they can produce proper realization by the power of the Lord. I did a little research and got confirmation from Panuswami. What happened when Shishupal merged into the body of Krishna? That was the third time around of Jain Vijay. Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, Ravana Kumbhakarna, Shishupal and Dantavakra. He merged into the body of Krishna. What happened? Afterwards, he returned to his position of Jain Vijay, or Jai. No, by the power of the Lord. It was a mission that he had sent him on, so he returned him to Vaikuntha by his own power. By the mercy of Krishna. Krishna gave his mercy to Shishupal, liberated him, and brought him back to the spiritual world. Thus, anger and hatred are included in this list. The gopis, mentioned earlier by Narada in that same discussion with Yudhisthira, he mentioned the gopis. The gopis had feelings for Krishna, but not mundane feelings. They had transcendental, not worldly lust, transcendental feelings of love. The prototype, the original, the undistorted, undisturbed, pure spiritual love for Krishna. So that's wanted. That's our topic. Now we're going to expand it a little bit more. When Srila Prabhupada spoke about Rupa Goswami's teachings, of course we read what he said in Nectar Devotion, but sometimes he wouldn't just write Nectar Devotion. He'd speak about this Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1-4 verse. And it's interesting. He combines, listen carefully, he combines the Padma Purana verse and the 7.132 verse and says that's what Rupa Goswami says, which isn't what Rupa Goswami says. And it begins, you've probably heard this, yena tena pakarena. Rupa Goswami didn't write that. He wrote this part, mana krishne devesha yet. So the yena tena pakarena is by some means or another. Mana krishna devesha yet. That's from the 7.132 Bhagavatam. Then this one is from Padma Purana. Sarve vidhi nishedha shur etayor eva kinkara. You with me? Oh, what's going on? Certainly Prabhupada knew what Brahma Samhita 1-2-4 says. Certainly he knew. Absolutely he knew. Now, he could simply say, mana krishne navesha yet. But he embellished a bit. for his followers, so we could get it right. Somehow or another, by this means, by that means, by some means. Fix your mind on Krishna. And all injunctions, prohibitions, vidhis and nishedhas, they're kinkaras, they're servants of those principles. Mana Krishna Navesha Yet. Now, here's a similar appeal. Again, a great authority for us is the author of Chaitanya Bhagavat, and that's Vrindavan Das. And he writes at the very wonderful verse. Sounds like Bhaktivinoda Thakur for those of you who don't know his bhajans. Krishna Mata, Krishna Pita, Krishna Pranadan. Krishna is your mother, Krishna is your father, Krishna is your life and wealth. I fall at your feet and beg you to engage your minds in thinking of Krishna. So we're following Vrindavan Das Thakur and appealing, begging, falling at your feet and begging, please engage your mind in thinking of Krishna. Because that's the principle that all other beneficial things are in pursuance of. And Prabhupada had such faith in this, I'm going to tell a little story, that not the image that I, of the story I'm going to tell, but it's in Chennai. And in a room conversation with a Mayavadi sannyasi, a Mayavadi sannyasi made an appointment to meet with Prabhupada. He accepted the appointment, and the man started criticizing Prabhupada, saying, you know, you messed up in your Sanskrit translation of Bhagavad Gita. And you know, he was a scholar. And he would say, here's the verse, without the detailing of, you know, the verse. And it says nothing about the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, but in your purport, it's all about the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And Prabhupada's reply was, any other? And then he went to another and went to another without the detail, and then another. It went on for an hour, just criticizing Prabhupada's Sanskrit translation of the Bhagavad Gita. And at the end, Prabhupada didn't even argue back. He just looked at his watch and said, time for prasadam, give them some prasadam. And the man left. And the devotees that were in the room were astonished, because Prabhupada was normally like fire when somebody, not just somebody holding a Mayavad position, he, you know, didn't waste the opportunity to speak strongly. Why did you not do what you always do? And Prabhupada said, this man, for a whole hour, he was saying Krishna's name. Krishna, Krishna. Again and again. So I was considering, he's saying Krishna's name so many times, although it's in criticism and scorn, he'll become purified. And next time when he comes to see me, maybe he'll listen to what I have to say. But he didn't give him what I have to say till he said Krishna's name so many times. You like that one, Jitendra? You like that story?
Seemingly speaking favorable, but he didn't mention Krishna's name. And Prabhupada said, this Mike Reiko, he will make more progress. Similar situation.
Okay. So now, this is the same text that we've been making reference to, this Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. In this case, it's going to be Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on the very same text. But it's the place is slightly different. It's chapter 8, towards the end, and we're almost done. Good news, huh? Making reference to 7.132, Tasmat Kenapi Upayena Mana Krishne Devashayat. And Vishwanath's commentary on this verse, it's the Vaidhi Bhakti section, is the basic and primary aim of all types of sadhana is one thing, fix the mind on Krishna by whatever method is effective. He's not making the same emphasis that Sanatana and Jiva Goswami did, that is a favorable way. He's making emphasis on these two words, vidhi and nishedha. Vidhi is regulations, nishedhas are prohibitions, the do's and the do nots. And he details this nishedha, or the prohibitory functions include, like the Ten Commandments. He doesn't use the Ten Commandments reference, but don't sin. And then if you have sinned, then some atonement for those sin. Then another is, don't slacken in your feelings towards the Lord. Don't enter into complacency or apathy towards the goal, that being with Krishna. Those are prohibitions. And then here's the key. When one follows the injunctions and the prohibitions out of fear, if I don't, I'm going to get spanked. I'm going to get some bad consequence here. You follow on that basis, Vishwanath is saying, this is Vaidhi Bhakti. So initially, one may have that, I want to be happy and I don't want to suffer kind of thing. But that is an entry level into something that's further progressive. So he then speaks of the same activities specifically. We're having darshan of the deity, or at Mangalarti, we come before the deity. You can come before the deity because it's regulatory. It's something you should do. It's good. And I don't want to not do it because, I may get some bad marks on my report card, my Krishna report card. Or, the temple commander may say, hey, you weren't Mangalarti, what happened? So, on a regulatory sense, if it's doing those things, that's Vaidhi Bhakti. The more advanced stage is from seeing the deity, from hearing descriptions of Krishna, from participating in kirtan, for coming together and doing what we're doing. If there's some growth, increase of the longing, this is language of Rupa Goswami, lobha, greed, to be with Krishna again. Not just, I don't want to get spanked, but I want to be with Krishna again. I don't want the misery and suffering of material existence. I want happy and peace and shanti. But if it becomes eagerness to be with the object, Krishna, that's the more advanced stage. That's the more advanced stage that's stronger than fear and enmity, Shishupal and Kamsa. So then he concludes, as long as that lobha has not awakened and one is doing for a different reason, then that's counted as Vaidhi Bhakti. So we still attend Mangalarti and we still observe Ekadasi, just like yesterday was Ekadasi. So we observe Ekadasi. But it's not just a regulatory, it's It's an opportunity to come closer to Krishna, meditation. Then it becomes, moves, progresses towards the spontaneous kind of meditation. And that's this, almost the last reference. That's Narottam Das Thakur, and he describes this specifically in the more advanced stages of devotion, in practicing, or the one who is situated in Raga Nuga Bhakti, they fix their mind upon Ragatmika Bhaktas, that's described in Nectar Devotion, perfected souls that are part of Krishna's entourage in Goloka, and they meditate on those persons and their words, their exchanges with Krishna, all the details about them. And that's an internal meditation while undergoing the regulations of bhakti. They don't neglect the regulations of bhakti. They're just that the meditation, always remembering Krishna, moves, becomes elevated, becomes more condensed, like making milk sweets. Making sweet rice. That's because I've done that. I haven't made milk sweets. But when you start, I used to do this every Saturday night for the Sunday feast. It was, having sweet rice was, you can't have a Sunday feast without sweet rice in those days. So I was trained how to make sweet rice. It's big, that, and how to do it. And it, you know, it just slow, gentle boil, and the water evaporates. It gets thicker and thicker and thicker and thicker. So the meditation upon Krishna similarly becomes thicker and thicker and thicker, as if one is following properly. Now, this is last little reference. This is Bhaktivinoda Thakur, another great Vaishnav authority. And when we're pursuing bhakti, sometimes it's tough because calamity happens or something unexpected, etc. So here's his comment. It's taken from Jiva Dharma. It's a response to a question. How can the mind, dominated by lamentation, fear, anger, greed, envy, etc., meditate on Krishna? Basically, messages, you tolerate it. A devotee may become afflicted by lamentation and illusion because of the death of a family member, or because a coveted desire remains unfulfilled. But he must not allow such feelings to paralyze and cripple him. It is natural to mourn the demise of a son, but one must quickly overcome such unhappiness by taking shelter of Sri Krishna and praying to him for solace and strength. In this way, a devotee must train himself, this is the mind, to always remember the lotus feet of the Lord in all conditions. And the most perfect of example for us is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Whatever he was doing, he was always engaged in absorbed thoughts, deeply absorbed thoughts in Krishna. And the highest stages of love for Krishna. So that's our topic. That's the foundation. And then as we go along, many other thoughts on this topic, expanding the topic. So, Jitendra, can you hit the light switch? And then we'll see if there's any comments or questions. So, Bal, you have the microphone? Good. Yeah, Giridhari?
I'm wondering if remembrance is its own practice in one of the nine processes, or
yes,
if it's kind of within all the others, or if it's like it can be done as it's in it of itself.
Well, if you're a meditator yogi, yeah, But if you're a devotee, you can remember Krishna during everything that you do. And it starts from hearing and chanting, and then the remembrance carries over while you're worshipping and the other expressions, offering prayers. It's not a box. Generally speaking, in a life of devotion, it spills. It goes over into other boxes. But if your question is it possible to just do that one thing and not anything else, not in a life of devotion, but in a life of mechanical restraint of other things and trying to do that one thing. Is that clear? Yeah?
So it's not really done so much just like sitting and trying to remember Krishna without chanting or hearing.
Yeah. I mean, when you're... Yes. Yes. It's natural. The condition of Krishna consciousness that awakens from the process of bhakti includes remembrance of the object of devotion. As devotion awakens, devotion to what or to whom? Now, if you're an impersonalist, know to whom. Just fix the mind. Or like, sacrifice unto whom? No, unto whom, just sacrifice. It's really spacey, but that's not our contemplation. Our contemplation is devotional. So it's any expression of activities of devotion. You've heard Prabhupada say, you give Krishna's book and you're thinking of Krishna because it's Krishna's book. You'll be thinking more thick or more thin, but thinking of Krishna is there. It's impetus for remembering Krishna. Okay? Anything else? Yes, Shravan?
When you mentioned about the envy, it reminded me the past time, the story you mentioned while you're doing Sankirtan in the airport book distribution.
Uh-huh.
One person was really throwing the book on the floor and saying, do not go. And after some period, the purification happened and he pointed out, please take a book. So, staying with the process when envy pops up is going to be purifying rather than disconnecting from it.
No.
Could you please purify my thought?
Sure. You retreat from that envy space and go to a neutral space. And why is that feeling there? It's a primordial misuse of free will feeling. And that brought me all my problems. So I'm not going to stay with it. I'm going to select something else from the menu of options of free will. That's bhakti. Anukul yasya sankalpa pratikul yasya. So I'll accept things favorable and reject things unfavorable. That's not favorable. Because deeper down in your heart, or each one of us, there's love for Krishna. And this other, this envy or enmity, that's not us. That's something else that may be conditioned, may be a strong conditioning, but it's not us. So let me go from that space. No, by the way, that story wasn't at the airport, it was Boston Common, Harinam. And the man was hearing Harinam every day. He didn't have lunch. He just came out at his lunch hour and listened to the Harinam with enmity. But he was hearing the holy name, so he became purified. Against his volition, but, nonetheless, he became purified. His madness didn't go away. He was still like a crazy fellow. But his aversion to Krishna changed. I don't know what happened after that, because I got traded to New York from Boston. Okay. Anything else? Yes.
Maharaj, the goal, we know the goal, that it is to remember Krishna and never to forget him. Practically, it seems to be very difficult to always remember Krishna. So, I mean, what is one thing that we can do practically to nurture that?
We are going to be discussing that question the whole weekend. And specifically, I'm going to be speaking on that topic Sunday for our audio, our public program. But you want one thing. There's so many things. What's your pick a favorite out of the so many things, or do multiple of those. A beginning is to recognize there's this aversion. Solution to a problem begins with recognizing there's a problem. It's like health. When something gets to the point where it hurts, you may be doing something that's detrimental, but you just keep doing it because it doesn't hurt. Then when it hurts, then you pay attention to it. I better do something about it because I don't like pain. But some people are stoic. They just keep going on. Even if there's pain, they just ignore it. And it makes the situation worse and worse and worse. It degenerates. So a beginning is recognizing this is a problem. Identify what the problem is. So you're there. And now what's the remedy or the medicine for the problem? Well, according to Kapila Dev, it's favorably accepting the association of devotees. Here we are. There I see a number of devotees here. And to take that association of those who are on the path to awaken their Krishna consciousness and hear from them, serve them, and avoid offenses when interacting with those nice devotees. That's one of five things. And there's the other four. Okay. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. On the point of one of my questions is related to the topic of, it's called Niyamagraha. And as you mentioned yesterday, there are a lot of rules in practice and the cultivation of devotional service or bhakti. So if one doesn't, Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions one should always keep in mind that all of those rules, the servant, the purpose is to always remember Krishna and never forget him. Mm-hmm. So what to me that means is that requires a certain degree of maturity, so that one doesn't prematurely give up, like just small things. I'm thinking there's rituals that we practice that are meant to help us remember Krishna, but if we are focusing more on the rituals than the purpose, then we're missing the real point. So it requires a certain degree of responsible maturity to understand to what extent is my remembrance dependent on these rituals, or to what extent can they sometimes interfere with that? Does that make sense?
Well, kind of, but not exactly. Meaning, the interfere with, this is my rudimentary understanding, interfere with has to do with a spontaneous spike of emotion for Krishna, not a day-to-day, it's interfering with my devotion to Krishna. If there's a particular exhibition of ecstatic love, then by neglect of some vidhi of Vaidhi Bhakti, it's not an offense. Otherwise, one observes these things in normal circumstances, everyday circumstances. That's where the interference comes, not in a regulative sense, a day-to-day exhibition of bhakti. Anything else? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.